Hey, everybody, this is Adam Alexander from NASCAR on Fox. You're listening to the Front Stretch Podcast with Brian Nolan.
Hello, beautiful people. It is the week of July the 11th. Ross Chastain is still pissing people off, and this podcast and this program begins now. What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? This is the Front Stretch Podcast with Brian Nolan. We got a great group on this week's program. Ryan Bart, driver of the number 6 car for JDM Motorsports, and the number 47 for Mike Harmon, who joined the program, and a little bit of reuniting my former Stock Car Scoop co-host, who's going to be co-hosting the pod this week. Adam Cheek is going to be diving into all of the wild action that happened at Atlanta. Ross Chastain continues to make more enemies. Chase Elliott gets his win at his hometown. Third win of the season for the Dawsonville, Georgia hometown boy. Parker Kligerman, friend of the program, also getting a victory. We'll touch on that. And we're going to preview Loudon. So without further ado, let's green flag it up.
Boogity, boogity, boogity. Let's go racing, boys.
The words of Darrell Waltrip. Boogity, 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 boys. Let's go racing. Green flag is out. We have recorded probably over 100 podcasts together. So I know this man probably more than I probably want to. No, I'm just messing with him. I like this guy. He gets on my nerves. I get on his nerves. But in the end of the day, does some great, great work. Stock Car Scoop every Monday and every Friday. Over the past few shows, he's been absolutely killing it. Adam Cheek joins the program. Mr. Cheek, you've been rocking it over the past couple of times hosting SCS. Thanks for coming on the Front Stretch Podcast. And what's going on, dude?
Yeah, thanks for having me again. We've got a lot to break down from Atlanta. And I think I was counting at some point when we were doing the scoop. I think we were nearing or at around 75 dual co-hosting episodes of the podcast or of the Stock Car Scoop. So we got close to 100.
Dang, I really thought it was 100, man. That kind of is a little bit disappointing. Maybe we'll do a few more, maybe, and then down the road it'll get to 100. We'll have to wait and see. We won't have to wait and see for Chase Elliott and his third victory of the season, because that happened in Atlanta, battling it out with Corey LaJoy. And when it was all said and done, last lap, it's no holds barred, Adam. LaJoy tried to go up high. Chase Elliott blocked. LaJoy ended up in the wall. Vicious crash for the 7 caution waves. 9 was out front over the 1. Sometimes it's just like that. And sometimes you're going to have races that end under caution. That's what happened. And unfortunate for Corey LaJoy, he put it all out there. It just was not meant to be. Your thoughts on that finish and just oh so close for Corey LaJoy.
Yeah, it's always cool when you see an underdog have an opportunity like that. And, you know, even with the parity that we've seen with these next-gen cars, there's that buzzword again. You're going to see these guys have those opportunities more at restrictor plates or super speedways more than these other races. Or honestly, you know, throw road courses in there with Buescher and McDowell being really good at road courses these past few weeks. But I don't. It's always, even if you don't win, like LaJoy, you know, ends up crashed, but it is always cool to see these guys get that opportunity. And LaJoy in his interview, you see that appreciation for the chance to run for a win. And you know, he was saying, you know, they let it all hang out there. They did what they could. I mean, they were in position. And this is something I think they have to plan on. You know, they have a couple months until it, but Daytona's right around the corner. LaJoy's run there before. He's run well there before. They've got a shot to make a walk-off win. And I know there was the caveat that even if he had won on Sunday, he wouldn't be in the top 30 in points. But with the way Brad Keselowski's been running, you know, maybe Todd Gilliland has a couple bad races. LaJoy has a shot to get into that top 30. So I think there's an outside possibility that they could win at Daytona. This gives them a huge springboard to aim for that. And at the same time, I think we did see an entertaining finish up until the yellow was thrown. I would have loved to have seen it stay green or LaJoy just brush the wall a little bit and have a Ross Chastain, Chase Elliott side by side to the line. I think that would have been a lot of fun. I mean, overall, it was a really entertaining race. We really never knew. You know, Chase was good all day, but you had guys like Ross up there with the damaged car, and LaJoy is an underdog that kind of kept us guessing all the way up until the checkered flag or the caution and subsequent checkered flag, I guess.
Now, unlike most people, Corey LaJoie was okay with wrecking. He said he would rather finish in the 20s than finish third. Take a listen for LaJoie talking with Brad Harrison after the race.
It just sucks, but I wouldn't change a thing. And I'm actually more content seeing the 7 and 21st slotted up. And I would have been second or third if it wouldn't have worked out. Could I finish a format? It would have paid way better, but
as well. What's fair now, the last lap?
Oh, anything's fair. Everything's fair. You gotta win the race. Especially how much weight's on it, how much money's involved in it. You know, the paycheck I got for finishing fifth through the first race is one reason why I wasn't content to run fifth. It doesn't pay enough to run fifth. You got to win the race. So you got to block, you got to dump, you got to send it in there. And if you're in position and you don't make a move, then it's your fault because the next guy's going to do it. And, you know, it's a bit out of, it's about out of character just for me to obviously be racing for wins. That's something new for the fans to see me up front, and hopefully it's not a unfamiliar sight going forward. I think as a team, we can do it. Not every week, but more consistently than we'll do.
Was that a late block?
No. I mean, it was a block. I mean, it's the last lap of the race, man. Especially in front of Dawsonville's finest, you gotta go for it.
And you heard it there, Adam. I mean, he said that he would have faulted himself more if he finished third of what he didn't do rather than going all out for it and finishing 21st wrecked. I personally like that idea. You're going all out for something and you're going to give it 1000% and not just 97 or 98%. I love the all out mentality that he showed Sunday.
No, I respect that 100%. And I think that factors in too. You know, if you're leading on the last lap and you make a move that you have to make and you end up getting wrecked, that was the move you had to make, even if it didn't work out. And that's kind of the same mentality. And I respect that. You know, if this is also a learning experience, like I was saying for Daytona, you know, if, cause I think there was a move during the final laps at Atlanta where he should have blocked one line and didn't, or something like that, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, but that gives him some experience for Daytona. And I think we kind of saw that last year too at Talladega Spring. Matt DiBenedetto had a chance to win and he didn't block the line that he should have or something to that effect. And he never really got a chance to, like, I guess, show that he learned from that in a Super Series race, because I don't think he was that close in Daytona Summer, Talladega Fall. Talladega Fall, definitely not because it rained, but I think it's the same principle, because you're in that position, you learn from your mistakes. And it wasn't necessarily a mistake. I think he was kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't on some level, just because of how unpredictable Atlanta has been this year. And really still no one knows what to expect after two races, but that's huge for that team. I mean, even if he doesn't make the playoffs with a Hail Mary walk-off at Daytona, we might see him win at Talladega. I'm not counting them out whatsoever, especially with the way the season's been.
All right, Adam, you ready to dive into it? Let's chat about it, my friend, because like I said in the opener, he's still pissing people off. And once again, he might be barking up the wrong tree, because Eric Amarola wants to fight him at a food line. And, I wouldn't mess with the guy that has bacon in his sponsor. But without further ado, once again, Ross Chastain gets into someone, ruins their day, almost ruined Martin Truex Jr.'s day. And in that scenario, Adam, I felt like it was a little bit Truex got loose. This one that he happened later in the race with Denny Hamlin, that was all 100% on Ross Chastain. And this is coming from Gateway. They had history. I don't know what he's doing. He said he changed. Obviously he didn't. And this is coming from a guy that that it has loved the Ross Chastain story, the watermelon farmer going into lower tier equipment, going to JDM Motorsports, then going to Nice, then going to Colleg, and then getting up or going to Chip Ganassi, then coming to Colleg, which is kind of a happy medium there, and then rising above the track house where he's finally excelling. With that being said, he has not changed, and I think it's going to bite him in the butt sooner rather than later, more specifically in the playoffs. And for me, it's just, I don't think he's going to change until something happens, Adam. And I think something's going to happen, whether it's Bristol or Martinsville before the Final Four race, something, because once again, he's not learning from his mistakes and he's doing exactly the same thing we saw him doing at Gateway?
Well, okay, first, it seems like it's a trend with people fighting people in food-related parking lots, because we had Mike Harmon with Applebee's a few years ago, and now we have Almirola and Chastain with Food Lion. But it's a tough situation because, like you, I love the Ross Chastain story. I love stuff like that. You know, he's a journeyman in NASCAR for really close to a decade and finally gets a shot. He's making the most of it. He's won two freaking races this year in the Cup Series in just his second year full-time competition. And yeah, he's pissing people off. He's not making, he's making moves that he shouldn't. And it's funny because just a few minutes ago, I was on Instagram and I came across a Photoshop of the Kenseth Logano incident from Martinsville. And in place of Kenseth is Hamlin, and in place of Logano is Chastain.
I mean, they're probably not wrong, to be honest.
Look, this is something I'm not going to be shocked at all if it haunts him into the playoffs. And it's not, it, and as I said on the scoop today or on Monday with Steven Stumpf, this is not something he wants haunting him as the playoffs are just, you know, seven races away or whatever it is. I don't love that he's doing this close to the postseason, and I don't think it's going to help him. But if we're looking at it from a positive angle, it's going to be a learning experience for him going into next year. You know, maybe do the stuff a little earlier on. NASCAR drivers do have memories like elephants, so maybe not. But it's a learning experience for him. This is just his second year of full-time Cup racing. It's not like he's new to Cup racing, but he's new to being competitive. Like, you know, when he in 2017, 18, 19, whatever, super speedways were the primary place he would run well at with a premium in that 15 car. And he would, you know, be up there top 10, top 15. But this is the first time he's really had a, even Ganassi, like they were kind of hit or miss when he was there, you know, especially after the departure of Lars, and you have him and Kurt Busch, you know, Busch won a race, Chastain came close a couple of times. This is the first time he's been in a consistently competitive car week after week after week. And has a couple of wins, and I'm sure that makes him, you know, a little more daring to go for more. But it is a learning experience. It is something that I think is important for a guy early, I don't want to say early in his career, but a guy early on in his full-time Cup career. It's a tough situation. You know, I feel for him. You know, you want guys like this to succeed, but he's going to have to watch his back when the playoffs start. And you were saying Bristol. A track like that, I would not be shocked if we see Hamlin, you know, exact some revenge at Bristol, maybe even the Roval with how close quarters that racing was.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the three cutoff races, you got Bristol, the Roval, and Martinsville. All three are very, I mean, kind of what you said, like you mentioned the Roval, all three definitely could be explosive, massive, massive complications that could arise after this. But let's hear from both of them, starting with Ross Chastain, on is he going to reach out to Denny Hamlin? And is this incident different than the one that those two had at Gateway?
Got a relationship now where I can talk to him now, right? I've got his phone number now. So, I definitely will, because, like, I was working towards a better relationship there. It's just... I just overcompensated. This one's so different because I had so much damage. I just, y'all know that I would take full responsibility if I just ran into him, but I had so much damage. I was so much tighter. We had done a lot to free the car up, and it was just way too tight, and I just couldn't carry the throttle I could earlier, and I still lifted some, but it wasn't enough. So I don't put this one anywhere near the other.
Do you need to explain that to him or others?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And now let's hear from Denny Hamlin. He was with a gaggle of reporters, so the audio is a little iffy, but we're still going to play it anyways. But he says that he has reached his point in this battle.
At what point has the line been crossed too many times?
I mean, it's just solid, whatever on this level on this road is safe. It's another... another unfortunate circumstance.
Is there any way he's going to win a championship this year with the way he's upset so many people?
I don't know. I think it's just everyone has a different tolerance levels, certainly. But I've reached my peak.
Well, then what do you do about it?
All right, guys, let him get on the cart on the right.
You know, it just, it all works itself out.
Thank you, Daddy.
You heard it right there, Adam. I mean, Denny Hamlin says everyone has their different tolerance levels, but I've reached my peak. So... I don't think he's going to do it in the next remaining seven races before the playoffs, but when it's September 17th in Bristol, Tennessee, or October 9th in Charlotte, or October 30th in Martinsville, Virginia, I would not be surprised to see those two battle out and those two tangle.
Like, okay, what did Hamlin say after Gateway? He said, you know, these guys have to learn these things, something to that effect.
Something like that.
This time he says, these things work themselves out. And I'm like, yeah, that 11's getting into the one a couple of times before the end of the season. I would not be shocked to see them tangle a couple more times. And, you know, to Ross's credit, he's owned up to it. But again, I don't know if it was Hamlin that kept saying this or who it was, but if these things keep happening, what does it matter? And yeah, this year is a learning experience for Ross. You know, next year, I think Trackhouse is going to be very good again, but maybe we'll see Ross be a little more reserved in his racing. That aggression is a good thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it needs to be mitigated for sure.
Final thing here before we dive into our interview with the driver of the number 6 car, Ryan Vargas, a friend of the program, been on the pod before, Parker Kligerman, driver of the number 75 truck. Adam, he did not just win at Mid-Ohio on Saturday afternoon. He dominated that race. Now, he told the Front Stretch podcast at the a couple weeks ago in Sonoma, my goal is to win at different types of races. I want to win at a road course. I want to win at a mile and a half. We already won at a super speedway, but I want to win there again. And he got the first part of that accomplished. Adam, I loved what I saw. And he, like I said, he did not just win. He dominated, leading 56 of the 67 laps. This guy absolutely showed that if he was in a full-time truck, like I said, full-time, he would definitely be in contention for the championship and that trophy at the end of the year. Really, really cool story to see that 75 truck in victory lane.
Yeah, and there's a number of really cool sides to that. And I think it was pretty cool to see that on Saturday as opposed to, you know, we had Xfinity a couple hours later and that finish was super lackluster. Really, no one really committed to making, you know, a bid for the victory there, or they waited too long. Kligerman and Zane Smith went at it for lap after lap. And there's a number of cool, and it's funny because I had Kligerman and his crew chief Chris Carrier on my radio show on 910 The Fan earlier this year. And it was really cool. That was just after Daytona. And they ran well. They pushed Zane Smith to the win, ironically, after, and then he and Smith are fighting for the win at Mid-Ohio. It's a cool story on multiple levels because you have Parker, who's been kind of, we're talking about Ross. Parker's kind of a journeyman himself. You know, had the stints with Red Horse and all that stuff. And then with Swan in the Cup Series, ends up on his roof at Daytona during that practice session. And then kind of settles in with Henderson. He becomes their go-to guy. They're out of Virginia, where I'm from, which is cool. And they're a small team. They won Talladega 5 years ago. And they're putting in good runs. Kligerman's sneaky good in that truck. And it feels like he's kind of overlooked in a lot of races, but this one, flat out dominating, like you said, leading all but 11 laps. And you really didn't think it was going to happen because Zane's won, what, 3 races this year. You expect him to probably win a couple more. Like, okay, he's going to get a win on a road course and or another road course, I should say. But instead, Kligerman fights them all. That was a hell of a battle. That was so much fun to watch. And to see an underdog guy and underdog driver and team get a win is always pretty cool. And that battle was just so much fun to watch.
Adam, we're going to take a quick break, my friend. But when we come back, you're going to be hearing my interview that I conducted a little bit ago with Ryan Vargas, driver of the number 6 car for JDM Motorsports. Right now, folks, at this time, I'm going to bring to the program, he is, as he calls on his Twitter, a dream chaser, but he's also known as a NASCAR driver. You can follow him on Twitter at RyanVargas_23. Ryan Vargas joins the program. What's going on, man? How you doing, bud?
I'm pretty good. Just getting ready to head to Atlanta. Got a big weekend ahead with our partners, Swan Security and BrandSmart USA, so should be a fun one.
Let's dive into this season. Obviously, it's a couple weeks ago I was talking with Grant Enfinger, and he kind of did what you're doing currently now, going back and forth from two teams to two cars. Just how big how much of a struggle is that trying to get into that rhythm of, okay, I'm in that 6 car, and then bam, I'm in that 47 car. Just how much of a struggle is it to get a rhythm?
I mean, it's not really too hard. You know, what for you from one team to another, you learn each other's, you know, quirks, everybody's, you know, goals and stuff. And it's helping me get the valuable seat time. And, you know, at the end of the day, you got to accomplish the goals of each team. And that's when what we've been focusing on and trying to push to do. And so far it's been pretty good. So I've been learning a lot, getting that much really valuable seat time, especially on those road courses. So just really enjoying myself.
Second full-time year, you ran some races in 2019, 2020. What's been the biggest difference to full-time compared to just the one-offs in 2019 and 2020?
Oh man, just being in the car consistently, you know, get out of the car and then instantly have to switch modes and get ready for the next race. It's definitely difficult, but it's a challenge that I've been working for my whole life, really. It's something that I've always wanted. And to be at this point where you're able to race nearly week in and week out, it also helps you just become a better driver because now you're getting laps consistently, learning and learning and learning. Learning is one of the key words of this interview just because that's what I've been doing. You know, I've done over 50 starts now at this point, which is crazy to say, but anytime you go on a racetrack, you're learning something new.
Ryan Vargas, driver of the number 6 and the number 47 car, joins the Front Stretch Podcast with Brian Owen. Ryan, let's talk about that 47. How did that 47 deal come about with Mike Harmon? Because I think it was, maybe it was Portland, maybe it was earlier, that I was looking around in the garage you're in, and there's someone in that 6 car. I think it was Greg Golding. And then, boom, you show up, and you're in the 47. So how did that 47 deal come?
Yeah, you know, Greg Golding came in, and, you know, they had a great partnership going on over there, and you know, I had an opportunity arise to drive that 47 car at Portland, and you know, at the end of the day, anytime you're able to compete at the top at one of the top echelons of stock car racing in North America, it's a great opportunity. And Mike and his folks, they welcomed me with open arms, and you know, we went out there, we had some pretty good speed. That car, you know, we enjoyed. I had a really, really fun weekend working with those guys, and you know, learned a lot about that track, learned a lot about racing in the rain, and overall, just lots of great learning experiences overall.
Now, as great as it is to be able to run those road course races with Mike Harmon, how do you balance that emotion that comes with the JDM business decisions that force you to look elsewhere at times for a ride? Because you said that Greg Golding, he had a good business opportunity come in with that 6 car. So just how do you balance those emotions?
You know, it's just about, you know, keeping things in perspective. You know, at the end of the day, I'm in this sport, you know, to continue proving myself and continue driving. And, you know, I'm very fortunate to be in this sport. You know, the way I always tell people is a bad day in racing is better than a good day not in racing. And, you know, they're always going to have its challenges, but I'm just thankful to be in these positions.
Ryan Vargas, driver of the number 6 47 car for Mike Harmon Racing and JDM Motorsports, joins the program. Obviously, you're in Monday Night Racing. We have a couple people at Front Stretch that are in it as well. Now, you got a lot of people from JDM in Monday Night Racing. You, your crew chief, your tire specialist, Gabe, all in M&R. So just how big is iRacing and just Monday Night Racing in general around JDM?
No, it's a lot of fun. You know, it's something that, you know, I guess you could say it's almost like a team bonding thing. It's something that we can just go out, get on iRacing, have some fun. And, you know, the day after on Tuesday, we could all joke about it and talk about how crazy that race was or how good we did or how bad we did. So it's a lot of fun to work with these guys, you know, in real life and then hop on iRacing and race head with them.
Now, speaking of like talking about and talk with being with those guys in the shop, one of the interesting things that I see is you're literally in the car helping these guys, whether it's not just at the shop, but to either in the garage area and everything. Should other drivers be doing that weekend and week out like you do?
I don't know if it's a should thing, but you know, every driver has their own thing. You know, me and Bailey, we're in the shop a lot. Bailey's in the shop all the time, and you know, I wish I could be out there more, but, you know, at the end of the day, I have to continue trying to work and continue finding sponsorships and stuff. So that takes up a lot of time. So every driver has their own way of going about being in the sport. Some of them, you know, they are able to come in and, you know, they have sponsorship backing them and they're able to put their best foot forward and make that stuff happen. And that's perfect. That's fine. Heck yeah. Like, I'm rooting for you. You know, there's no right or wrong way to do it. And, I just like doing what I'm doing, and it seems to be going pretty good so far.
Couple more things here, Ryan, before we let you go, my friend. You really burst onto the scene in 2020 with some great sponsorship opportunities. Swan, obviously, this week on the car. Last year, you had TikTok on the car. So what was that period of time like? Because we're kind of close in age, and we all know that our generation loves all the social media, whether it's TikTok or Instagram or Snapchat. So what was that period of like, and how has that experience helped you create new partnerships like Swan Products with different sponsors?
Well, you look at that TikTok partnership, the way that all happened was so unique and organic, which was pretty cool. And then you also look at what that sponsorship really means. You know, you have this global tech giant in TikTok, you know, available all over. And they entrusted me at the time, a 19, 20-year-old kid, you know, who never really had a major sponsor to his name, suddenly thrust their brand all over me, all over the race car, and they trust me to represent them. And I think that right there set the bar as to what is possible with me and also with other partners. So now, you know, if you're one people who like the kind of folks who run Swan Security, or you're the folks who run Monarch Roofing or any other partner I work for contracting, they look at it and they say, okay, if these big guys can trust Ryan with their name, we can trust him with ours. There's no doubt about that. So that's kind of the way I look at it. And that's helped me a lot. Be able to kind of go into meetings and have a little bit of leverage and know what value I bring to the table.
Now, obviously, a little fun question before we finish it off. Last time we heard that you have been rooming with another Xfinity driver in Myatt Snyder. So just how did that friendship start? And what's that dynamic like for you two around the house? Is it mostly racing? Is it not talking about racing? Just what's that dynamic and friendship like?
I think it's more just banter, you know, funny back and forth banter with each other. It's unique, you know, it's a unique dynamic going out there and racing against your roommate, because anything that happens on the track, you can come home and laugh about it and just be like, man, that was crazy when that happened. So, it's fun rooming with Maya. He's, obviously has a lot of experience in the sport. And so it's kind of nice to be able to lean on him for some tips or advice on how to go about some of these places. Cause you know, at the end of the day, he has some more experience than I do. So, I try to be a student of the sport, even in my own house.
I love it, my friend. Last but not least, for when you go into the weekend, what's the main goal for you? Obviously, you don't have you don't have as good of equipment as, say, like a Junior Motorsports or a colleague. So what's the main goal? Is it top 15s? Is it top 20s? Is it top 10s? What's the main goal for you week in and week out?
The main goal is to come home with all the fenders on and without a scratch on the car. Okay. Normally, if you do that, the top 20s and top 15s sort themselves out. That's the way that's why my philosophy, that's the way I try and do these things. Obviously, when you get down to the nitty gritty and it's go time, you go. And we did that here at Atlanta earlier this year. We were in the top 15 coming to the green light checker. We ended up finishing 12th, knocking on the door of a top 10. So we've ran top 10 on intermediates and super speedways before. I don't think this is any different. I think we'll go out there and just do our best, and hopefully the results sort themselves out.
For all the latest, you can check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanVargas_23, as well check out his great sponsor, Swan Security, at Swan Security. And once again, check out Ryan and the rest of the NASCAR Xfinity Series every single week on USA and NBC. Ryan, thank you so much for the time, my friend. Good luck this rest of the season, and let's chat soon, bro.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thank you.
Awesome. Ryan Vargas, driver of the number 6 car and the number 47 car for JDM Motorsports, as well as Mike Harmon Racing. Big thanks to Ryan Vargas for the interview and taking some time out of his afternoon to spend it with myself. Now, most of this podcast was recorded on Monday. However, huge news, and I mean massive news. I can't remember a time that we had this big of a news on a Tuesday in the world of NASCAR in some time that was not part of an event that a race was being held. That being said, Adam Cheek joined me. Adam, it came out of the blue. It's like when a massive thunderstorm hits out of nowhere, there's beautiful skies, and then boom,
pouring rain. That's apparently what we had, because Tyler Reddick was announced as the newest member of 2311 Racing starting in 2024. It was really cool how Denny Hamlin did it, Adam. He was on a conference call with the media. Tyler Reddick suddenly appeared out of the blue, and then he left, and then he kind of did the Chris Collinsworth slide, where he slid in to the left to appear with Denny Hamlin, in which he made the announcement. Really weird, out of the blue. Your initial reaction, because this was a massive, massive surprise.
Well, I think my initial reaction, I saw that, I think the first thing I saw was Jeff Gluck's tweet, and at the top of my timeline, and I went, what? And that was kind of my reaction for like 10 full minutes. It's like, it's not a move anyone expected, I don't think. And you had told me to put betting odds on where he would have gone. 2311 would have not have been my top pick. Okay, if we're looking at it from Reddick's perspective, I think it's a good move. 2311 still building its identity and building its team, and they're only a couple of years in. I think he's a very good piece to have on there, because there's a few different scenarios that this could turn out to be. You know, we don't know whether it's going to be a three-car team. They've said the number of cars is TBD. So it could be Kurt retires and Reddick joins, or it's a three-car team or some other organization of that stable, something like that. But the magnitude of this decision is huge, and it sent NASCAR Twitter. It sent everyone spiraling into silly season rumors galore of who's going to take over the eight. Is Reddick going to go to another team for next year? How awkward is it going to be with him and Childress and being with that team? And of course, Richard Childress Racing putting out a statement as well. It took a little bit for everything to kind of come together and be like, okay, this is really happening. And yeah, it's a wild decision. And I know you had the same reaction that I did.
Yeah, I was shocked. I was at work. So I have a couple of Twitter notifications, people that are on Jeff Gluck, our boy, Zach Sterniolo. And so Zach Sterniolo, it popped up on my Apple Watch, and I'm like, I had to take a double take. So then I immediately went on my phone. I literally stopped my lawnmower mid-mow, and I went to my phone, Adam, and I never do that. And I'm like, wait, what? And then I finished my mowing really, really fast. And then I just went on Twitter, and just, I was in my truck for like 10 minutes, just refreshing Twitter to see anything, and the reactions were wild. But I think the biggest reaction was from RCR, in which they tweeted their statement: "We're proud of the success Tyler Reddick has found at Richard Childress Racing. We're focused on winning a championship in 2022 and 2023. Although timing of this announcement could not be any worse." Now, our Daniel McFadden from Front Stretch was on the conference call, and he says that they should not be surprised. Apparently they were surprised, because they tweeted that announcement, and I've not seen an announcement like that ever, where it definitely looks like they're a little bit bitter, they're a little bit salty. And first off, your reaction to that, and then second off, have we ever seen a time like this in which so-called quote-unquote poached a driver from one team to another team?
Well, you said, I was going to say, you said you stopped your lawnmower mid-mow. I was in the middle of producing a show, and like that was all I could think about for like that entire segment, and we were just talking about it. That's all we talked about during the break. And yeah, and then that statement comes out, and that's a whole nother level to this. You're absolutely right. I have the same reaction. It does seem like they're bitter, maybe a little bit surprised. Look, I can appreciate where they're coming from. You know, they just won their first race with him, and they're heading towards the playoffs. They're going to have at least one car in the postseason. And Reddick is, you know, he's had some bad luck this year, but it seems like things are kind of coming around for him, and he's in a position to go deep into the playoffs. You know, they just want to focus on that. But if we're looking at Reddick is looking out for himself, he's trying to figure out where the best spot for him to go. You know, if he wasn't feeling like Childress was the spot he wanted to stay at, you know, that's making the move as soon as possible and giving them enough time to find sponsors or whatever. That's absolutely the best move and the thing he should have done. Now, as for when of the last time we've seen a move like this, I don't know when the last time it was we saw someone, you know, quote unquote poached of this magnitude. But I think the move, this might be the biggest move or most surprising move we've seen, ironically, since he won a title for this guy since Junior went to Hendrick back between 07 and 08. I mean, there's been a couple since then. You had a couple big team-to-team moves. You had Carl Edwards going from Fenway, Roush Fenway to Joe Gibbs, and you had Kevin Harvey going from Childress to Stuart Haas. But the fact that this was something that no one saw coming at all and just dropped on a Tuesday out of nowhere and set Twitter on fire. We didn't have Twitter to the same magnitude we did back when Junior made that huge move. So this was something new to witness.
Last but not least on this topic, before we switch it back to our Loudon preview, why now, Adam? Why did they not just wait till after the season to announce this, or before the start of next season? Why did they have to announce it right now?
That's a great question, and one I can only answer by saying what I've seen other people saying, and that it was to prevent something from getting out there about it. Potential leaks, you know, having it leaked before, you know, the team could announce it or Hamlin could or something like that. That's my only, really, the only logical step I can think of, because a year and a half in advance does seem extreme. But on the other note, if, because 23-11, it hasn't been the greatest of years for them. Bubba has had horrendous luck and Kurt Busch has had a win, but you know, some bad runs here and there, and kind of a very Kurt Busch season, you know, some solid runs on occasion. But, you know, for 23-11 to say this, I think it does inspire a lot of confidence in them going forward. And if nothing else, it's to establish them in NASCAR even further. You know, you have a guy who's had bad luck this year and a guy who's possibly going to retire soon. He's in his 40s. And this is a guy they're bringing in who's Tyler Reddick's, what, just south of 30 or somewhere around there. So he's a two-time Xfinity champion. He's in a position where, and 23-11 is in a position where they want to establish themselves as much as possible. And this is a huge step towards that.
It's going to be wild. It's definitely unexpected. The biggest announcement that we've seen in quite a while. We're just going to have to wait.
Chaos.
Yeah, I know. Honestly, Adam loves that word and we got it Tuesday morning. But without further ado, let's switch it back over and talk about the current year. And let's dive into our week preview of Loudon. Going to a flat track, this time being Loudon, New Hampshire. I've been there once, 2019. Decent place. Very, very hot when I was there. It's like 103, 104 degrees. Absolutely brutal. 318 miles, 301 laps, stages 70, 185, 301. There will be practice 11:30 a.m. on Saturday. Right after that will be qualifying at 12:15. Race at 3 p.m. Forecast looks decent, 87 degrees, scattered clouds, potential of rain in the evening time. So hopefully it will avoid us. This is all according as of Monday afternoon. Adam, a little different track, though. Your overall thoughts in New Hampshire? They had two dates for a long time. Moved it to one. It feels like the attendance is better since it's just one. So overall, I mean, it seems like it's going to be a unique race, because last year, what a weird upset winner that we had, and it came out of nowhere in Eric Amarola.
Yeah, last year was a bonkers race. You had the three different Gibbs cars spinning on, what, lap two, lap three, from the sudden rain that hit the track.
Out of nowhere.
Kyle Busch gets his race ruined after looking like he's possibly going to be one of the cars to beat. And then Eric Amarola, of all things, wins the race, which, you know, it would be neat to see him win this year, given that this is his quote-unquote retirement tour or whatever. But yeah, New Hampshire, I'm interested to see, because we haven't had really a track like this with this next gen car yet. You know, I guess Martinsville, you know, it's flat, but it's half a mile rather than a mile. So I'm interested to see how this plays out. You know, we certainly won't see what we saw at Atlanta, with whether it's the big crashes or Chastain's aggression or any of that. I mean, we'll see the aggression. But yeah, New Hampshire's such a weird, like, I'm glad we went down to one date on that track. I will say that. Sorry to any people who like to go to New Hampshire, listen to this, I apologize. It's just not the most exciting track. The races are kind of forgettable there for the most part. But when you do have something like last year, that kind of restores your faith in it a little bit. And so hopefully this year will live up to that. I really don't know what to expect. I think this is a good place where we might get a surprise winner. You know, maybe we'll see a Chris Buescher win, of all things. You know, maybe Justin Haley will find something, since it's, we haven't really been to a track like this before. Haley's shown some good runs at a few tracks. He had a good run at Atlanta last week, so maybe that'll boost him into possibly locking up a playoff spot. You never know. But New Hampshire is such a weird track. It's hard to describe. We're going from the unique mile and a half super speedway to the unique mile long concrete track. It's such a weird place that it's hard to know what to expect with the next gen car, since we really haven't anything like it this year.
Yeah, it's a flat track, and I feel like the next gen car struggled with flat tracks. Gateway, Martinsville, those flat
tracks. Yeah.
So I'm hoping that it's not going to be as big of a struggle as it is. A couple guys to watch for on my end. Obviously, you got to keep an eye on the Penske. You've seen Brad Keselowski win multiple times when he was at the two car. Him, Blaney, and Joey Logano all finished in the top 10 last year. Stewart Haas Racing with Amarola, and then Kevin Harvick led about 60 laps as well. Keep an eye on both of those. And then just some upsets. I mean, you saw Eric Amarola came out of nowhere last year and got the victory. It was just bonkers there. Christopher Bell also, he finished second, and more than likely, if they wouldn't have shortened the race down to 293 laps due to darkness, it was 301, but they shortened it because they had that few hour rain delay after the, what was it, lap 8 incident with the 19 and the 18. So if they wouldn't have called it with 8 to go, more than likely we would have seen Christopher Bell in victory lane and not Eric Amarola, because Amarola only led 25 laps. So keep an couple of eyes out for Ryan Blaney, Kevin Harvick, obviously, Brad Keselowski. I don't think Keselowski will be contending, but what about that two car? Austin Cindric finished third in Atlanta, completely apples and oranges. So with that being said, would not be surprised to see that two car potentially get a top 5 or a top 10 in Loudon. Adam, let's get to our race picks. I'm going to have you go first since you're the guest. Give me a dark horse pick. And then who is your pick to win the Am Better 301 at New Hampshire on Sunday, July the 17th?
Well, it's interesting you bring up the two car, because I was just thinking about how underwhelming of a season Brad Keselowski's had. And he's won at New Hampshire before. I don't see him winning, but I just figured I'd put that out there because Keselowski really needs a good run. So maybe this will be a good weekend for him to get a points boost. He is not my pick to win, but do you want me to start with Dark Horse or do you want me to go with my pick first?
Oh, let's go with the Dark Horse first, my friend.
Okay. Well, it's so hard to pick someone at New Hampshire just because you have those select few guys that are always good there. You want to pick a Kyle Busch. You want to pick a Martin Truex Jr. It's really hard to pick a Dark Horse, but if I had to go with one, and I'm going to limit myself to guys that haven't won this year, I think... I am going to take Eric Jones.
Okay.
So,
oh, wait. Sorry. We're going Dark Horse first. I thought you picked to win. I was like, holy crap. Sorry. Carry on. My apologies. No. Sorry.
So I almost, when I said I didn't want someone who had already won this year's my Dark Horse, even though Trackhouse could factor into that, I almost picked Kevin Harvick, but he's not really a Dark Horse, even though he hasn't won this year. I think I'm going to go Eric Jones as my dark horse, just because he had a good run at Atlanta. That 43 has had some solid finishes all year long. I just think that they could pull out a sneaky win at some point. They are not my pick to win, though, but I'll let you go with your dark horse first before I pick my winner.
I'm going to go with my dark horse being the number 41 car. Cole Custer finished 9th last week, shown some speed, shown some improvement. He mentioned on the podcast last week that they had speed at Martinsville. So with that being said, I know you can't really compare the two. But if he had speed in Martinsville flat track, I would not be surprised to see him having speed at Loudon. So I'm going to pick the number 41 car.
Okay, well, that would be, because I had to look this up, because I thought Harvick had won a couple of the past few races there. That would mean Stewart Haas would have won 4 out of the last 5. I am not going to go Stewart Haas for my actual pick. I am going Joe Gibbs. I am going to go with Denny Hamlin. It just feels like a Denny race, and it feels like he wants to take some of that frustration out after getting wrecked by Ross in this past race at Atlanta. Yeah, the best way to get frustration out, rebound with a win. And I'm going to take the number 11 car, get a second win of the year, first since Richmond. Richmond's similar to New Hampshire in a way or two. So with it being kind of sort of flat, I don't know if that makes any sense. But it feels like it felt good when I was saying it. So let's go with that. Hamlin's won at New Hampshire before. He's won at Martinsville before. He's got wins at flat tracks. I'm going to take the 11.
I'm going to go with the guy that has to possibly win just to get in. He's 19 below the cut line, so it is possible he could point his way in, but I think he's gonna win his way in, and I think the streak comes to an end. I saw him win this race in 2019 there, and I think he wins in 2022 there. Kevin Harvick, the number four car, goes to victory lane in Loudon, Adam.
You know, I can't disagree. If he's going to get a win, it's going to be this place. So,
Adam, let's switch it off into some checkered flag with some final thoughts.
Checkered flag, here I come. Oh, no!
Final thoughts are arriving. Final thoughts have arrived. Adam, let's dive in to anything you want to rant, rave, vent about, because trust me, for those that don't know, Adam loves to vent multiple times. But with that being said, Adam, anything that is on your mind in the world of NASCAR?
You know, I think just the main thing is hoping that these last seven races are as good as the rest of the season was and all over the place, because we've got a bunch of different tracks coming up. You know, you got a Michigan, which is a 2 miler, and Richmond, which is 3/4 mile, and a couple of road courses. And I mean, Indy last year, we saw the disaster with the curbing, and hopefully that doesn't happen again, but Indy's certainly an unpredictable place. You've got Daytona, and I love that the schedule after the season we've had with all of these different winners and so much competition, I love the schedule is so all over the place and provides us with that chance to maybe see 16 or 17 different winners. I would absolutely love that. Ranting about anything, I don't know if I really have anything. You know, the attendance at Atlanta didn't look great, and I'm sure some of that could be attributed to the heat and whatnot, but I would really love for them to come back to Atlanta next year and put on a show as good as it was on Sunday. I don't know if it was the best race of the year, like some people are saying, or the best race in years, not even close. But it was entertaining. There was some great racing, and I would love to see them, you know, maybe find a middle ground for this super speedway configuration, especially with the way Xfinity was, because Xfinity got very spread out, and the Xfinity race at Atlanta would be a must watch next year for sure.
For Ross Chastain, he is continuing to get himself into more and more weeds. And you know what happens when you get into more and more weeds as a professional landscaper? More and more weeds start to grow. And once you get one weed, you get two weeds. And once you get two, you get four. And once you get four, you get eight until, well, you put weed killer on it. And apparently, in which Ross Chastain said he was going to stop this, the weed killer has not arrived to his house yet, because he continues to make the same mistakes as he does time in and time out. And one of these times, it's going to bite him in the you-know-what. Whether it's at Bristol, whether it's at the Roval, whether it's at Martinsville, I don't know. The thing is, he's got a lot of pissed-off drivers waiting to make him become a wrecked race car at the end of the night. Eric Amarola, Austin Dillon are the latest casualties. Dillon says every single week it happens. Eric Amarola wants to fight him at a food line, and Denny Hamlin says he's reached the peak. Will it happen soon? I doubt it. But will it happen when it matters most? I can almost guarantee it. For Ross Chastain, he's going to have to battle his teammates, overcome multiple obstacles to even get a chance to win in Phoenix. Will he? He's better start driving differently, even if he wants to get a shot.
And that's exactly the thing he should be worried about going into the playoffs. Those cutoff races, with how close quarters of racing all three of those races have, if he's in danger, he's got to be worried. And it's kind of the same deal as it was with Harvick and Chase Elliott last year, where Harvick ends up falling out of the playoffs because of his attempted payback and then ending up in the wall. I think people were a little hard on Ross, maybe a little too hard on Ross, but I do think, like with Austin Dillon, you know, I think that wreck was partially Truex getting loose. Like you were saying, I think Truex did own up or took partial responsibility for it. But that aggression needs to be toned down a little bit, especially if he gets to Talladega. He's going to be going for a win there. He's already won there. He's going to be a threat, and that aggression's good, but to a point.
I will say this. If he didn't have multiple strikes against him, that wreck would, with Truex, would be a non-factor. So with that being said, we're just going to have to wait and see. But big thanks to Ryan Vargas for coming on the program. Adam, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on. And for those that are also listening to this program, listen to Adams. Every Friday and every Monday, he previews and recaps all the latest in the world of NASCAR, Stock Car Scoop, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, FrontStretch.com, and everywhere you can find podcasts. Adam, appreciate you, bro. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it. It was certainly a chaotic race in Atlanta. Enjoyed recapping it. And my next race is Richmond. Looking forward to it.
For Ryan Vargas, Adam Cheek, and everybody else that is with FrontStretch.com, I am Brian Owen. Thank you so much for joining us. Next week, we're going to be previewing Pocono, recapping Loudon, and a whole lot more. Thank you so much for joining us. See you then.